Hello and welcome to episode 385 of the UK True Crime Podcast. I'm Adam. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. The story this week comes from Birmingham and is yet another example of how the most terrible violence can take place unexpectedly on what is just another normal day. So let's set some context for our story with our Guess the Month and Year game. At number two in the UK charts was 7 years from Lucas Graham. At number two in the US charts was friend of the show. It was the Bieber with Love Yourself. And in Australia, number two in the album charts was Keith Urban with Ripcord. In the news this month, US college student Otto Wambia was sentenced to 15 years hard labour for trying to steal a political poster in North Korea. Batman vs Superman, The Dawn of Justice, starring Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill, premiered. There still seems to be a big market for this stuff. British magician Paul Daniels died at age 77. No, I'm not going to do the impression. And in UK true crime news, former English international footballer Adam Johnson was sentenced to 6 years in prison for sexual activity of a schoolgirl. And four of the gang of brazen burglars involved in the Hatton Garden jewellery heist were sentenced to 7 years in the slammer, whilst the fifth was given 6 years. So did you get the month and year? It was March 2016. Of course it was. Birmingham is the UK's second city. And did you know that tennis was invented on a lawn in the Edgbaston district in 1859? It's home to more canals than Venice, with 100 miles of canal navigations. Birmingham is also the location of the Alexander Stadium, the biggest athletic stadium in the country. The venue that hosted the 2022 Commonwealth Games. But in 2016, for our story today, this sports arena was also the scene of something quite different. At just 17 years old, Ralph Nibbs was about to become one of Britain's most exciting rugby players. He made his debut in 1982 with Bristol, and with his first touch of the ball, he scored a try. This was the start of a super successful rugby career, spanning 436 first team matches for the team, and he scored 122 tries during his career. Despite playing for England's under 23 teams touring Romania and Spain, Ralph never progressed to play for the main England team, although he came very close. An indication of the type of man he was when he turned down the chance to tour South Africa with England in 1984, due to his stance on apartheid. He said at the time, "I don't see how I could justify going to South Africa, therefore appearing to condone apartheid." 4 years later, work commitments saw Ralph ruled out of England's 1988 tour of Australia. But he did manage to play rugby sevens for his country. And Ralph's final first team game for Bristol came in May 1996 against Hartlepool, and Ralph finally retired from rugby in 2001 after a great career. Following his retirement, Ralph spent 20 years operating at a very senior level in HR, working in both the public and private sectors. Since 2011, Ralph had held the role of Head of Human Resources at United Kingdom Athletics Limited. It must have been a super interesting role for an HR professional with the sporting pedigree that Ralph had enjoyed. Born a boy, Lauren Jessica was born in Lancaster in 1974 to mathematician father Graham and Pauline, who was a full-time mum. A couple of years later, Graham and Pauline gave birth to twin boys, but tragedy hit the family when one of Lauren's twin brothers took his own life after suffering mental health challenges. At school, Lauren was remarkable. She was a remarkable student. She sailed through her time at Lancaster Royal Grammar School before earning a place at Oxford University to study physics. And it was in 1998, while studying for a doctorate at Oxford, when Lauren came out to her parents as transgender. Her mum, Pauline, said, "It was Easter 1998 and I loved the way she did it. Mum, you always wanted a daughter, didn't you? I had three boys. Can I be your daughter?" And that's how she did it. And I thought it was lovely. Despite the initial shock, as you'd expect, Lauren's parents embraced her identity. Pauline said, I said to her, "What do you mean?" So she had to explain. And then I was shocked, really, and disappointed. We had three children, and she was the only one I thought might give us grandchildren. She said to us then, "I'm telling you now because I've definitely made up my mind I'm doing it. Don't you dare change my mind." Her parents went on to describe how they scrolled through their memories to see if there was any sign of this in Lauren as she was growing up. Her dad, Graham, said, "Although the idea of transgender never crossed our mind, I suppose it's slightly relevant that he as a boy was very gentle, never in fights. Her two brothers were always in fights. She didn't like the rugby culture of the grammar school. But that could describe me too. It doesn't mean you're transgender." Following coming out, Lauren abandoned her studies in Oxford and in 2000 underwent gender surgery in Brighton. Lauren then moved back to the north of England, where she took a master's degree in gender, sexuality and queer theory at Leeds University, from which she graduated in 2006. It was during her time in the centre of world football, Leeds, that Lauren rediscovered her passion for running, a sport she'd enjoyed so much when she'd taken part in cross country at school. At the Todd Morden Harriers Club where she trained, Lauren came out to some of her fellow runners. At the time, Lauren was in her 30s, and her clubmate said she was not an outstanding runner. She didn't have the natural ability of some, but she trained like an absolute demon to reach the top. It was at this club where Lauren found herself and the niche of fell running, the British equivalent, I guess, of mountain racing for elsewhere in the world. Now, have you ever done it or watched it? It's a tough old gig. I think you've really got to admire these athletes. In July 2010, Lauren took part in her first national championship, the English Fell Running Championship, which she won. The course was a tough 25.5 kilometres of steep climbs and challenging descents. Lauren completed the course in 2 hours, 49 minutes and 31 seconds, beating the second place competitor by a full minute and a half, which is some margin. In third place was another transgender athlete named Paula Payne, who had yet to transition. Lauren went on to win the English Fell Running Championships in 2011 and 2012 and became the British champion too in 2012. Also that year, Lauren earned fifth place in the Pikes Peak Marathon, which you may well have heard of, even if not involved in the scene, as it's a worldwide famous mountain running event. No, I'd not heard of it either. After winning a string of races, Pauline asked her daughter whether it was okay for her to run as she was transgender. Lauren told her parents that the Fell Runners Association showed amazing support when she came out as transgender. By 2010, Lauren had started competing abroad, and she had to inform the International Association of Athletics Federations, the sport's global governing body, about her transgender status. But they didn't quite know how to deal with Lauren, as they didn't have a transgender policy until 2011. The UK also did not have a transgender policy until 2014, and it was around this time that Lauren's problems began. Lauren applied to take part in the London Marathon as an elite athlete, but she was rejected for reasons that were unclear to her. She also wasn't able to participate in the Snowdon race, which is a major event in the Fell racing calendar, due to questions about her gender. A report stated that Lauren's rivals did not know she was male at birth, which she wanted to keep that way, as she believed that any biological advantage had disappeared with the procedures that she'd undergone. Lauren did not put her success down to any male physiology, but very committed and dedicated training, which worked as a way to improve my mental health and careful planning too. Now, you and I both know there's lots of controversy about transgender athletes in sport today, and it's still ongoing. This is what, nine years later. In June 2015, Lauren had an important meeting with UK Athletic, who said that Lauren's past results were at risk of being erased if she did not submit a blood test to prove her testosterone levels were low enough to compete as a woman. Lauren felt traumatised by this meeting and later told how she was left suffering flashbacks, which she self-diagnosed as post-traumatic stress disorder. So whether this is correct or not, we can't say. However, what is not in doubt is that Lauren was incredibly upset by what was happening and the process that she was going through. A friend and a fellow runner from the Harriers Club said she felt they were going to take away the life she'd built up. She'd fitted into the fell running community and had a wonderful life, a lovely life. She called the meeting an attack. She said it was vindictive and that she felt abused. She felt that her very way of life was being threatened, that UK Athletic was trying to kill her, to take her down. However, UK Athletic strongly disputed this, and they took a much less emotional view, saying that the request for blood tests was simply the result of having no other documentation about the procedures that Lauren had undergone, and was supported by the transgender organisation that UK Athletic had been using at the time. The spokesperson said the UK Athletic had offered to both assist with sourcing a doctor and also paying for this service. Now, please note, I'm not denigrating Lauren's more emotional response to the meeting. How she felt is, I think, quite understandable, even if this wasn't the intention from the athletics authority. Ralph Nibbs, who we spoke about earlier, was the head of human resources and welfare at UK Athletics, and went to Lauren's home to discuss the long-term issue of her competing with the sporting governing body. They were both looking for some form of resolution to the issues. On the 22nd of March the same year, Lauren left her home in Wales. She was armed with two knives hidden in her backpack, and she drove to Birmingham's Alexander Stadium. After the two-hour drive, Lauren reached the stadium at about 10:30 a.m. As normal, she parked the car, she walked into the main building and approached the reception and asked if she could speak with Ralph Nibbs. As the receptionist went to get Ralph, Lauren pulled out her two knives. She walked into the company's open plan office, and as soon as she saw him, she launched a frenzied attack on Ralph. She lunged and attacked him about the head and neck area using both knives, making repeated attempts to stab him. Ralph wasn't expecting this. He was naturally caught off guard, with the 52-year-old later recalling the sight of his own blood. He was aware of blood pumping out of his neck, and he could see it splattering on the wall behind him. Despite being stabbed in the throat in a blow which nicked both his carotid artery and jugular vein, Ralph managed to grab both Lauren's wrists while shocked colleagues rushed to help him. The attack had been so severe that an eyewitness claimed that Lauren looked as though she was trying to skewer meat. The two colleagues who came to his aid, Tim Begley and Kevin Taylor, jumped in to help, but they were also attacked by Lauren as they attempted to stop her from attacking Ralph. They managed to restrain her, and it was the help from quick-thinking colleagues that helped save Ralph's life, as they used their knowledge of first aid to stem the bleeding from a 2-centimetre hole in his neck. The attack was a devastating one, as it turned out that Ralph had suffered a stroke at the scene, which left him temporarily blind in one eye. He now has restricted vision in both eyes, restricted movement, and difficulty eating due to severed nerves. Lauren faced trial at Birmingham Crown Court, appearing via video link from prison. She pleaded guilty to the attempted murder of Ralph Nibbs, possession of two kitchen knives, and assault occasioning actually bodily harm to Tim Begley and Kevin Taylor. The prosecution laid out a pretty straightforward case about how Lauren had a disagreement with British Athletics officials which escalated. Rather than resolve the matter through the appropriate channels, she armed herself with weapons, drove from her home in Wales to Birmingham, and launched a premeditated and savage attack on Ralph, which resulted in him and his colleagues sustaining a number of life-threatening injuries. The court heard some pretty shocking testimony, including how Lauren had told a psychiatrist that she had fantasized about going to the Alexander Stadium and killing all of the staff. I imagine you've got the same questions as me following that statement. Let me read it one more time. She told a psychiatrist before she went to the stadium that she'd fantasised about going there and killing all of the staff. Julie Warburton, representing Lauren, said that the athlete had struggled as a child to fit in and find her place in the world. People who knew her said she had a compliant nature and she certainly wasn't aggressive. Following her gender reassignment surgery in 2000, for the first time she felt she belonged. She felt accepted, she said, and loved by the fell running community. Warburton added that she said she feels awful about what happened to Mr. Nibs and was extremely shocked to hear of the effects of her actions. She also said he's one of the nicest people she has met at UK Athletics. Ralph Nibs addressed the jury, saying, "It still doesn't feel like it happened to me. It feels like it happened to someone else. I used to think I could protect my family and myself, but that's not the case. My overriding feeling is I'm very lucky to be alive, as the vascular surgeon informed me on several occasions in the day following my operation when I was in hospital. Since the attack, I've been re-evaluating what's important in my life as I try to get back to some normality after this near-death experience." He added that the traumatic life-changing experience had left him with permanent partial sight loss, robbing him of his independence. For her crimes, Lauren was sentenced to 18 years in prison. Surprisingly, maybe, she was emotionless as she learnt her fate. The judge concluded that Lauren posed a significant risk of harm to the public. He described how the attack was frenetic, cool and calculated. He said that Ralph was taken entirely by surprise, and that only the intervention of others had prevented a more serious outcome. The judge added, "Mr. Nibs will suffer from this attack for the rest of his life." The lead detective commented afterwards, saying, "We understand that Jessica had been asked to provide further evidence of hormone levels after historical complaints to UK Athletics, that she'd an unfair advantage competing in women's events because she had been born a man. The governing body's policy required the athlete to take a blood test, but she took exception to this and feared being unable to compete. Jessica carried out a violent and unprovoked attack on a man whose sole objective was to enable her to compete. She will now have plenty of time behind bars to contemplate the devastating consequences of her actions." The Jamesons made no excuses for their daughter's violent attack. As Christians who regularly attend an evangelical Baptist church, they say they pray for Ralph's full recovery. After Lauren's sentencing, the parents said, "We deeply regret the injury inflicted on Ralph Nibs." They said the attack was out of character for their daughter. "Whatever the technical psychiatric diagnosis, it's clear to us as parents that the assault is only understandable as a consequence of a mental health crisis precipitated by the affair with UK Athletics." In a later interview, Lauren's mum Pauline said, "Basically, she felt she was at war with UK Athletics, and when you're in war, acts that aren't normally acceptable can be justified." She went on to recall a Christmas visit Lauren made. "It sounded dangerous. I told her not to do anything silly." By that stage, she had taken legal advice about suing UK Athletics. Lauren's parents became concerned about their daughter's behaviour. They said, "We didn't think she had it in her nature to carry it out. We never ever imagined she would do something like this. We were absolutely horrified when we heard she'd taken the knives from where she lived in Wales to this meeting in Birmingham. Not even one, but two. Basically, she went armed. The background to this is she'd never even hit anyone, let alone stabbed anyone." Lauren Jessica is currently serving her sentence at HMP Foston Hall, a women's prison in Derbyshire. The debate regarding whether transgender inmates should be placed in the prison of their gender at birth has become heated in recent years, with arguments arising from the safety of other inmates as well as the transgender inmates themselves. Several approaches have been tested, with HMP Downview trying out a specific wing for only transgender female inmates. A survey in 2021 looked at the British public's view to housing transgender inmates and provided, I think, some pretty interesting results. 25% of all Britons believe that a specific wing for transgender male and female inmates is the best approach. Interestingly, women were more likely than men to say it should be the gender they identify as or should be given the choice. In late 2022, data showed that in the United Kingdom, 230 inmates out of the 78,058 prison population identified as transgender. So a small number. Would the cost be justified? I wonder what you think. And what do you make of what we've heard today? Firstly, I've got to say this, okay? My intention is to tell a crime story. It's not to offend anyone, and I've tried to be very careful around my language, around these sensitive and emotive issues. I really don't want to get into the discussion around how transgender people are treated in prisons, other than what I've said so far, or even how competitive sport handles these issues. This is the content for other podcasts, and the debate still rages, as you and I both know. What I do want to consider is why someone who'd never shown any hint of violence, why they would commit such a violent, premeditated attack. To take two knives to Birmingham for the meeting with Ralph is clearly strong intent. I can't help thinking about that car journey that Lauren made from Wales, wondering if she was actually going to go through with the attack, which was clearly attempted murder. I wonder if she thought she actually wouldn't go through with it when she got there. Lauren actually claims that she didn't receive the help with her mental health she asked for during what was a challenging time. We hear that she'd spoken about killing everybody at the stadium. Now, if she had received this help, would the attack have been prevented? We've heard similar so often on this podcast, and I'm so reluctant to criticise our health authorities who do the best they can, very trying circumstances and massively understaffed. I guess we'll never know for certain. But what is beyond doubt is that Ralph was ferociously attacked while just carrying out his job on a normal day. Luckily, and we hear this often again, his colleagues displayed incredible bravery, which undoubtedly saved his life. But to suffer such injuries while working in an HR, a standard office job for a sports authority, this just shouldn't happen, should it? And unfortunately, his physical injuries will be a lifelong reminder of the events of that terrible day, let alone the mental scars that he must have suffered. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the UK True Crime Podcast. To discuss this story and any other aspect of UK true crime, please head to Facebook and join over 96,000 of us who talk UK true crime 24/7. And to support the show, please do head to patreon.com/UK True Crime for 75 full-length bonus episodes. Yep, 75, and tons of other exclusive content and competitions. A huge thank you to the latest members of this community. That's Sam Thorley, Warren Temple and Peter Bartley. And to Ben J1AM, like it, for upgrading your membership. Thank you so much. Your support is just so much appreciated. So please do come and join us. Just head to patreon.com/UKTrueCrime for the price of a cup of coffee a month. You can join our community. Okay, so that's all from me for another week. So please do get your tickets for the live show in South Shields on the 2nd of June with my good friends Paul and Mike. Just search the Customs House website in South Shields. I will also be in Sheffield in September. I will update you on that shortly. Should be a great day. So until we speak again very soon, please do take it easy. And remember, despite all the others, it's always the others. Stay classy. Cheerio for now.